On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour. Welcome to a brand new broadcast week on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll go. It's where you should go to get access to the live, never costs you a single dime to access it stream. That is where you go to access the chat room where I'm heading right now. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And the chat room is free and easy, and it's a fun addition to the whole multimedia experience that is the horn. If you listen at some other time between the other... I've been away from this for 2 or 3 days. If you listen at some other time besides when the program's live, you're liable to find the horn chat room empty. But if you're here between the hours of 6 p.m. and 9 p.m., Monday through Friday, Eastern Daylight Time... Well, the Eastern Daylight Time applies to the 6 to 9 p.m., not the Monday through Friday, but you get my meaning. Well, you'll find a rollicking good time there by a host of folks who come in and converse and chat and carry on and holler at the radio and stuff like that to their heart's content. And, Lord God, Billy Bob, this computer's slow. Someday... Oh... Someday. Yeah, there's everybody. Our chat room moderators, Sparky and Texas Betsy, already in there. Anatole and Paul are there. And good evening to everybody wandering by that I may not see between now and when you wander by. Folks will be arriving in short order along the way. I mean, we're not a rule-oriented bunch who line up at the door and you know, crush the server trying to get into the chat room. We just come by as the opportunity presents itself. It is, in fact, the 7th day of July, 2014. I hope you all had a good Independence Day holiday weekend. We certainly did. Just had a delightful time. Sat there and smoked the ribs and took the ribs and had a humongous rib feast with the kids and the grandkids. And then toward the end of the evening... on Saturday night, we all engaged in something that has become quite a rarity in this country. We went to the drive-in movie theater picture show. Yes, indeed, we did. There's a couple of drive-ins left in almost level West Bicod, Virginia, and one of them is up on a ridge in sunny Calhoun County, and that's where we went, and we had the What? Chat room moderator Lottie noting in the chat room, I've got tornado warnings in Massachusetts. Tornado warnings. Yeah, but there ain't no climate change. Yeah, who knew that the world had been tilted in such a way as to move Massachusetts down, you know, Tennessee, Alabama way. Sheesh. That's okay. Give it a couple more decades and we'll have typhoon warnings in the Arctic. Why not? Anyway, we had a lovely weekend. Hope you did too. The little ones especially enjoyed the drive-in. And it was just a delightful simple, pleasant evening. Made homemade ice cream. The little ones had never had homemade ice cream before. To see a little one who's never had homemade ice cream get it for the first time is to see a picture of absolute delight cross their little faces. You can't buy that with money. And by the way, I have the world's simplest homemade ice cream recipe. One of the things that always puts me off about making homemade ice cream is all the cooking, and then you got to temper in some eggs, and egg tempering's a pain in the ass, and you got to cook till it's this way but not that way, and the back of the spoon, and bull. I got a nice, simple homemade ice cream recipe, no cooking involved. Just, and you can modify how rich you want it with how much cream in it you put in it, how much you don't. It's wonderful. Next up, and I've promised them this, so I, you know, being the opa, I have to carry through. Next up will be a variation on a treat from the Shoals, not to be found in many other places. Orange pineapple ice cream. And yes, it's every bit as good as it sounds. This will be more of a sherbet. Wow, Lottie, there's already been a funnel cloud spotted in Lynn, Massachusetts. Hey. Lottie noting, yeah, tornado warnings, and we never get them here. Well, never's over, Lottie. Blame it on that climate change that doesn't exist. So anyway, lovely weekend. Hope you had one, too, as noted. We should have a perfectly ordinary broadcast week ahead of us. Dr. Bill was magnificent, as usual, this afternoon. You know, he's going from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. now, because Rick Smith, my colleague, and in my humble opinion, one of the very best progressive broadcasters in the country, is going from 3 to 6. And you really should check him out now that he's not in that 9 p.m. slot that keeps the Malloy Truth Seekers from being able to listen live. You really, really should, because Rick is as good or better, emphasis on the word better, than anybody doing anything in the time slot that he is presently in. Period. Bar none. End of sentence. By the way, Rick doesn't pay me anything to say that, and I don't say that just because he's on the horn. But yes, in point of fact, beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and extending through 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and this is my own bias showing through regarding these three humble hours, there's no better radio to be had. None. Okay. Of course, you know, this being the beginning of the week, it's Moran Monday on the horn. Moran Monday being that day that we take to focus on the real, I mean, it's not just idiocy. I mean, it's the top shelf stuff that happens between Friday and Monday, Moran Monday. Someday we'll have some musicians, and I'll write the lyrics, and we'll have a song, you know, just another Moran Monday. But we don't. Right now we've got some Calliope music, but I'm going to forego the Calliope music to play you some sound from another quadrant. Our friend Jessica pointed this out earlier this weekend. Admittedly, this goes back to 2011, but it is such a brilliant exemplar of the mindset behind this notion. And secondarily, I'm doing this because, looky there. Now, see, if you're listening to the horn, you're actually listening to the future. Because stuff we talk about here, you'll find elsewhere in the media 2 weeks later. For instance, it was a solid 2 weeks, maybe three ago, I don't even remember now, when we talked about Rollin' Coe. which is what these anti-human, anti-environment, right-wing assholes do. Isn't it fun to not be on the terrestrial airwaves so that you can talk about right-wingers in terms that actually describe them? Assholes! They spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars modifying their pick-em-up trucks because they've got their identity all tied up in their automobile, which is so weird as to be incomprehensible to me in the first place. So they can do this. Now, granted, there's some video involved. But again, the title of this on the YouTube is Rolling Coal on a Hot Babe. Rolling Coal on a Hot Babe. So you got a guy and some other guy driving along in their modified diesel pickup truck past what is arguably arguably a lovely young woman. This, then, is the audio to that.
Hey, excuse me, ma'am. Do you smoke?
What?
Do you smoke?
Yes, I do.
All right, we'll just stand by.
Yeah, that's exactly what you think it is. That's a guy in a modified diesel pickup truck made to belch huge, toxic, poisonous plumes of redneck diesel exhaust. And upon seeing this lovely young woman walking along the side of the road on what appears to be a pretty day, excuse me, ma'am, do you smoke? Well, yes, I do. Well, here! And they proceed to envelop her in a cloud of cancer-causing, toxic diesel fumes that are just chock-full, I mean laden. Laden. With cancer-causing, ultra-fine particulate matter. What that was, and how it should be treated, is as assault with a deadly weapon. Now, it absolutely is. She admitted that she smokes, which means that she's probably going to have some sort of health impact down the road. She didn't say what she smokes. But in answer, you know, because the coal rollers are terribly, terribly clever, they buried her in toxic exhaust, which she had no way not to breathe. Little bastard should have been arrested, presented to a grand jury, indicted, tried, and imprisoned. I'm not talking about some traffic ticket. Diesel fumes are straight up deadly. But this rolling coal phenomenon has there's a feature on it over at Raw Story today, which of course draws on a piece from another outfit. But here's the fun part: if you were to go to this, and it's always the case with these things, you know, go for the feature, stay for the comments. And the very first thing you see in the comments is some jackass saying, well, if she didn't look so slutty, it'd be not okay. Yeah. And then, of course, there's the person who manifests something around disapproval. But it isn't disapproval that they belched toxins onto this innocent woman. It's that they did it with the wrong vehicle. Only some faggots in a Power Joke Ford owner would do that. a Chevy or Dodge guy would have gotten her into the truck with him. You no pussy getting faggots. Like I said, come for the feature. Stay for the comments. They're proud of this, you see. They are, no kidding, really, really proud of this. Yeah. So, you heard about this weeks ago on the Horn, but it is finally making itself out, making its way into the rest of the media landscape or some portion thereof. Texas Betsy pointing out, I had major asthma issues in Dallas a few weeks ago. Unlike Austin, they don't have electric buses up there, and the exhaust seems pointed or targeted at the people waiting at the bus stop. You know, the diesel fumes. Yeah, yeah. There's no, and see, that's the thing. I used to be really into the diesel vehicles, the so-called clean diesel vehicles, but it's a hydrocarbon. How can it be clean anything? It's, yeah, clean diesel, clean coal, sure, why not? No, it turns out they're advertising slogans. Because you cannot run a diesel engine without producing ultra-fine particles. I specifically asked Dr. Michael McCauley about this in our conversations, and he said, even if you, no, diesel, ultra-fines, no way to not make it happen. It's part of the process. And this thing has apparently gotten legs all over the country. At the Raw Story article by David Edwards, you'll find a 2013 video called Wisconsin Coal Rollers' First Ever Coal Train. South Carolina truck owner Ryan explained, "The feeling around here is that everyone who drives a small car is a liberal. I rolled coal on a Prius once just because they were tailing me." It's bad for the environment. That's definitely true. And some of the kids that have diesel trucks can look like tools. And you can cause a wreck, but everything else about it is pretty good. By the way, there are real-world implications to this. Apparently, there are 21,000 excess deaths every year from diesel pollution. And diesel toxins create a cancer risk 7 times greater than the combined risk of all 181 other air toxins tracked by the EPA. One of these coal rollers in Wisconsin said, "I run into a lot of people that really don't like Obama at all. If he's into the environment, if he's into this or that, we're not. I hear a lot of that. To get a single stack on my truck, that's my way of giving them the finger. You want clean air and a tiny carbon footprint? Well, screw you." Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that because the Raw Story article is based on something posted by Dave Weigel over at Slate. Maybe some people think that I'm kidding when I say that these right wing horses' rear ends are actively trying to harm us. It's not just a matter of you know, taking your gun to the grocery store. You know, you're going to poison, maybe even poison a few people along the way with your co-rolling pick-em-up truck. Because you're just that cool. Thank you, Anatole. Noting, hey, Your Wisconsin accent sounds authentic. Nah, it's really not. It's really not. So, there's that. But Lord God, Billy Bob, we got us some, I mean, we got a whole bunch of moranity out here today. Enough for probably 6 or 7 shows. Luda pointing out, subject line, coal rollers. Bob, them there fellows got smarts real good. Their mama made sure they got them there some schooling, I done reckon. And I know, what's frustrating about this is that it starts in one place and then it spreads like the cancer that's within the diesel exhaust all over the country. Wisconsin coal rollers in their first ever coal train. Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina. I mean, if you want to, it's hard, that the Wisconsin accent just doesn't fit. I mean, it really does beg for a southern accent, doesn't it? I mean, if you want reduced emissions and a smaller carbon footprint, well, screw you. Welcome to America 2014. Jesus. Asa out in Vancouver found another one he describes as, here's a bunch of shitbags that roll coal on their own friend inside a room. Essentially, they gas him. Over on Facebook, Ben Birch suggested earlier today that, let's go out and get the coal rollers liquored up and roll coal on them inside their own closed garages after they pass out. I mean, they want to do it to other people, right? Hey, by the way, 23 minutes past the hour, and you know what I didn't mention? I didn't mention that we managed to keep all the plates spinning on all the little sticks and keep everything going here and pay for Agnes's masseur and my masseuse and the cabana boy and the pool boy and the spinning rims on the Bentleys and the Gulfstream 5 jet and everything by listener contributions here. Mm-hmm. If there were Bentleys and pool boys and command boys and masseurs and masseuses and so forth. Which there aren't. No, we do keep things going here with contributions and only contributions. And because we pulled up short because of the shortened week last week, we wound up on Thursday $125 short over the weekend. That got down to $60 short. $60 short. So tonight's fundraising goal is $210. And thanks very much to everyone, including Reinhard, who got us started right before the program earlier today. Thank you all. Thank you, Kevin. For all of your help, and so hopefully we can find 21 folks with $10 apiece, or 10 folks with $21, or oh goodness me, don't make me do the 11s. 11s confuse me. Anyway, hopefully we can find those folks this evening and stay out of the hole, because the hole sucks. Apparently, Jeremy in Vermont, our buddy, says, Aerial America? I don't know what that is. Did a show on West Virginia yesterday. Sure is a beautiful state. Shows a bunch of mountaintop removal sites as well. Not pretty at all. And to be fair, they did tell both sides on the issue. It was on the Smithsonian Channel. Another one of those channels we don't get here. Then again, we don't get any channels here. No TV. I just kind of had to start out with the coal rolling thing because I'm just, I love it when we can show, you know, you really are. You're listening to the future. If you want to go over to Slate and read Dave Weigel's article, it is just called Rolling Coal with the subline, subheadline, Conservatives Who Show Their Annoyance with Liberals, Obama, and the EPA by Blowing Black Smoke from Their Trucks. This really is assault with a deadly weapon. And the question is, what rights does a person subjected to this have? Because this is America, this is one element of stupid America sort of running headlong into another part of stupid America. For instance, let's say you're a concealed carry person and somebody rolls coal on you and you realize they've just dumped a bunch of cancer all over you. Can you turn around? Or can your concealed carry person, as soon as they get done coughing, squeeze off a few rounds at the person who just rode coal all over them? And then present same as a matter of self-defense and defense of others. Yeah, Prius repellent. Now, let's check the audio out to this one, just for fun of it. Leaning out the window with his cell phone. That's wind. They're waiting for the Prius to get close enough. And now they're belching out the toxic black smoke. Now they're laughing.
You got him.
You got him. Just as if they were shooting at these people. You got him. Yeah, sometimes you got to lead them a little bit. This is being referred to in some corners as pollution porn. That seems to work. But that's not all we got this evening. Oh, no. Not in the least. Let's check in with a few of, how about a little something from, and I posted this on my Facebook page. How about we take for this Morning Monday a quick trip down to Longview, Texas. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there was a Longview, Texas gay pride parade, and as of Sunday, Sunday's publication of the Longview News Journal, the gay pride parade was occasioning some real moranity. And, of course, you can always find the moranity camped out over in the letters to the editor section. I attended the Gay Pride Festival. Now, see, this is the good one, okay? This is Philip Scott in Longview writes, I attended the Gay Pride Festival in Longview and met with the group Gerald Stock, in his letter of June 29th, mistook for rodeo clowns. I'm guessing he didn't attend the festival. If he had, he might have learned something about the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Look them up. No, they're not rodeo clowns. They're a group that uses drag and religious imagery to call attention to sexual intolerance and satirize issues of gender and morality. I found their group is international, and they raise funds to do outreach events for the gay community. They also counsel about safer sex, drug use, and risky behavior. When was the last time such things were public addressed in downtown Longview? And when was the subject even broached by any of our mainstream faith communities? Never.
I applaud the sisters and their efforts to keep people informed, safe, and healthy. And yes, they were cute. That from Philip. And that's as decent as it gets in Longview, Texas. Here comes James Russell of Henderson, Texas. I read your coverage of the so-called Gay Pride Festival. One of the attendees even stated he believes homosexuality is not a sin. He even stated that. Now, God mentions gay sin in His Word, the Holy Bible. In the book of Leviticus, chapter 20, verse 13, God says, if a man lies down with another man with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. Both of them shall surely die. They're going to die, and don't call them surely. Their blood shall be upon them. Sure seems to me that God has gays under a death sentence. Are these gays proud of being under a death sentence from God? Or are they proud that God sees their lifestyle as an abomination? I think this whole gay pride thing is very strange. It's very odd. It's very queer. Longview, I'm told, is somewhere in East Texas. Thank you, Texas Betsy. We'll just use a garden variety redneck accent for those folks. Isn't it interesting that James Russell of Henderson couldn't come up with the possibility of maybe these people don't believe in our bearded, long-haired juvenile delinquent in the sky god? It's impossible. And along comes Richard Jones of Longview, pastor of Calvary Baptist Church. Yeah, you know, this is going to be a good one. As a father, a husband, Christian, pastor, and a longtime citizen of Longview, this front page Gay Pride Festival article was disgusting, nasty, and indecent, too. Man, once you've gone past disgusting and nasty, and then you get to indecent, wow! We live in a great city. Why feature an event like this on the front page? Children are asking why men are acting like women. Are there not better events to cover? Oddly enough, children never ask why Baptist pastors act like bigots, apparently. Vacation Bible school events were happening all over the city with hundreds of children and workers. Brother Richard Jones, pastor, has apparently got the non sequitur down to a science. Does he mean that the gay pride marchers were marching past all those vacation Bible schools, or that, as I suspect more likely, there was more weird stuff going on in vacation Bible school than was going on in the gay pride parade? I'm seriously considering canceling my church's subscription. Our community deserves better. Let Dallas and the big cities keep their gay pride to themselves. And then there's Stacy McMahon of Gilmer, Texas. I am curious. Well, you should go to the gay pride parade. There's probably room for you in it, because there's always a curious contingent. What was the thinking when the mayor and other Longview officials sought to prohibit Ted Nugent from playing in Longview based on allegedly protecting the family, yet turn around a few months later and sanction a gay pride fest? Because, you know, a guy who screams on stage that he wants to stuff the muzzle of a machine gun up inside Hillary Clinton and pull the trigger, being gay is every bit as bad as that, morons. Maybe I should have played the Calliope music after all. I respectfully asked the mayor to check the introduction of the Ministry to Persons with a Homosexual Inclination, 2006 USCCB. Is that some sort of Longview, Texas law? Oh, no. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. I thought for a minute USCCB would be United States Church of Christ Bastards. No. It discusses that there are many forces in our society, demons, that promote a view on sexuality such as homosexuality that is not in accordance with God's purposes and plans for human sexuality. God's plans, you know, because we're all just a bunch of little predestined worms rolling around on the earth, living with God's plans.
Yay.
Oh, we got lots of more ands. Lots of more ands. Definitely lots of more ands. Let's check in with maybe a few others. Maybe it's a better idea. Somebody needs to pull Bristol Palin aside. Daughter of the hopeless publicity hound, Sarah Palin. Bristol, you may recall, was raised on abstinence-only principles, and that's why she wound up having a baby before she was out of her teens. And with, you know, we spent the better part of a week last week talking about the Hobby Lobby decision. Well, Bristol wanted to be the one that got the, let's call it the Chick-fil-A-ing of Hobby Lobby going. So she created her a hashtag on the Twitter, and she called it Hobby Lobby Love, which frankly sounds just a little bit icky in my book. Gay, straight, bi curious, queer questioning, whatever. Doing it in Hobby Lobby just sounds kind of gross. And it is, after all, private property, so they probably wouldn't appreciate it. But nonetheless, Bristol Palin, who apparently got all of her brains from Mama, that's not a compliment, started a hashtag, and she called it Hobby Lobby Love. And everybody was supposed, all the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians were supposed to go to Hobby Lobby and buy stuff and then tweet it under the hashtag Hobby Lobby Love, and show support for the persecuted Christians of Hobby Lobby. Hashtag oops. Someone immediately went to Hobby Lobby and found the wooden block display and turned it into 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then the next line down, they spelled out, all women deserve birth control. And took a picture and hashtagged it, Hobby Lobby Love. Then there was the sampler. What do you call that? Cross stitch. There was the cross stitch sampler. My body, my choice. Hashtag Hobby Lobby Love, with a nice Hobby Lobby shiny little frame around it. And then there was the craft pattern under the hashtag Hobby Lobby Love. The anti-masturbation cross. Safely train your children to keep their hands off their dangerous sin zones. Papoose cross and arm immobilizer work together to safely secure a self-raping child for 5 years and up. Adjustable canvas straps with Velcro. Adjustable head strap incorporated into backboard. Optional arm immobilizing accessory sides under board for firm spread eagle position. StopMasturbationNow.org. And, of course, somebody immediately went and found the coat hangers at Hobby Lobby. Someone else embroidered a red circle with a slash through it across a coat hanger, Hobby Lobby Love. Hashtag Hobby Lobby Love means selfie of dude delivering a used condom to them for baptism and proper Christian burial. And this one you have to think about a little bit, but it's really funny when you do. Oh, to have been a fly on the wall when Sarah had the birds and bees talk with Bristol. I wasn't doing anything else last week. Hobby Lobby Love, a friend needs a little help. Think a crochet hook will do the trick? What size should we use? Hobby Lobby Store will be partnering with Open Carry Texas for all your shotgun wedding needs. Yeah, check it. It's a hoot. Morans. There's just not enough time in the day. And then there's the preacher. Oh, where is he? There's the preacher who got all bent out of shape because he went to good old California. I knew we could count on y'all. Went to the Hobby Lobby in Burbank, California. Only to find a bunch of people spending their 4th of July holiday, a day for celebrating independence and freedom, by picketing Hobby Lobby. And complained that, these liberals they don't understand. They're weird. They made it hard for me to find a parking space down to the Hobby Lobby. And they sound like that even in California. Don't worry, just take my word for it. Oh, yeah. Daily Coast, by the way, has the story about Hobby Lobby Love. Hunter wrote it. Hobby Lobby Love is a thing, but it's not going well. Oh, what else? What else? I know he's kind of grandfathered, but it's too much. This is just too much fun to blow past. Probably shouldn't have used that word. Wrong verb. This is too much fun to ignore. Is that better? Maybe. Well, it may load or it may not. I've got a story here from Facebook. I don't know how we're going to do it, but I need to take about 2 weeks and work on the Horn's Kickstarter campaign. Because the news is out that Kickstarter has relaxed some of its rules. It used to be that you could roll a... That verb's done for the day, too. Used to be that you could begin a Kickstarter campaign to do things that were start-up-y or new manifestations or to produce an album. But there were some rules. Well, those rules are gone. Here's a Kickstarter that began last Thursday. The mission statement of the Kickstarter was, I'm making potato salad. Basically, I'm just making potato salad. I haven't decided what kind yet. And by way of premiums offered, he offered a bite of the potato salad. Or for a larger donation, you got to decide what one of the ingredients of the potato salad would be. It was a complete gag. Guess what? Potato salad dude raised $20,000 to make potato salad. And we're not talking about he was going to make potato salad and go into the potato salad business. He was just making potato salad. It was a hoot. It was a lark. It was a gag. But in 5 days' time, he raised more than his goal, so everybody gets charged. And now, dude is planning to rent a venue and webcast his potato salad making. Okay, no, I'm not jealous. I mean, I love potato salad. I don't know that I would have trusted the donors to. I mean, because what if they say, "We want you to include weasel nipples"? Then you're off into the problem of finding the weasels, coming up with another. Never mind. And this is at Gawker. Now, I'm not saying they're an awesome source of journalism, but it is not the Daily Current or the Onion. And every time I sit here and wait for a page to load on this once awesome and now ancient production computer, I think about what we're going to do if we ever get this Kickstarter started. One of the things we're going to do is we're moving the whole at least the main production computer and the computer for taking on the road are going to be Macs. That's it. It's just it. And Not an iMac, for the production machine, a full-on, no kidding, what's it called, a Power Mac or something? Yeah, one of those, and then a truly kick-ass iMac going on the road. Other things that will be included, of course, are new equipment. But the real gem of the whole affair, Jim, we've got a buddy consulting with us on this. The real gem of the whole affair will be what Jim has consulted with us about, and that is, and by us, I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket. I mean he's consulted with other people involved in the Horn day to day. Providing enough solar power to get us completely off the grid. Won't that be cool? Now, here's the question. That means it's going to be something like a $50,000 to $75,000, probably, Kickstarter campaign. Do you think, and I really would like your input, do you think we can spread the word far and wide enough to make that a reality? I don't know. But the potato salad story certainly does inspire me. I mean, potato salad? Phew. Anyway, like I said, this is like shooting a whale in a teacup. But still, it's more in Monday, and he will forever be a part of it. You just can't grandfather him away. No.
Where you been? Sternly walks in here, brings me his stack of show prep that he wanted me to see today. And he's outraged. Have you not been listening to this program? He's just figured more than half of privately insured women are getting free birth control under Obama's health law, a major coverage shift that's likely to advance. And it talks about how the average annual saving for women is $269. And it just hit you that everybody's demanding a benefit. $269 a year. And women can't pay that on their own. The taxpayers have to provide the $269. Yes, this is, well, here's the thing. I know, women have demanded independence and power and feminism and all this, and now demanding everybody pay. I don't even know how many women really are demanding it. You know, it's leftist women that are pushing this. But I learned something about this over the weekend that I hadn't stopped to consider. And you and I, you know, Mr.
Now, you know, anytime you challenge Limbaugh, he'll say he's just a jokester, he's just an entertainer. So when he says that he actually learned something, anything, over any time period, it's a joke. He's not capable of learning.
Certainly, and I assume a lot of you folks, too, we're from the old school where you provide for yourself.
The guy that makes $50 million a year, who owns a Gulfstream 5, a 27,000-square-foot mansion on the Florida coast with a maid and a cat and his third or fourth wife in a pit. What did he say?
Thirdly, and I assume a lot of you folks, too, we're from the old school where you provide for yourself.
Yeah, he's from the old school where you provide for yourself. Yeah, he's out there. He's putting up the broadcast antenna. Yeah. He's done it all. It's all bootstraps. Oh, come on. Rush couldn't find his bootstraps with both hands. He hasn't seen his feet since the Reagan administration. I love that. We're from the old school. Oh, and because he likes to tweak the FCC indecency regulations, did you know? This isn't an accent. This is a guy who, during family listening hours, would repeatedly make a joke about trans men saying they'd had an operation called an adidectomy. I really did have to explain that to a bunch of toddlers in a minivan one day. Only I didn't explain it. I just said, that guy's a very, very bad person and a jerk. But check it. Now, listen carefully.
That I hadn't stopped to consider. And you and I, you know, Mr. Snurdly and I assume a lot of you folks, too, we're from...
You fucks.
...from the old school where you provide for yourself. We were raised that...
As George Carlin said, don't play him too deep.
Whatever you want or need, you go out and get a job and earn enough to buy it. And if you can't afford it, then you...
Can't you just see Flush sitting there saying, I need a Gulfstream 5.
Put it off until you can. But the last thing you do is ask somebody else. You don't go down the neighborhood and knock on the front door of people and ask them to buy whatever you want.
What, Edith, huh?
Because that's what access to contraception is. That's what non-discrimination on contraception is. That's women going down the street and asking people to buy what they want. Oddly enough, this analysis does not obtain, and he does not address it, with regard to Viagra, vasectomies, Cialis, and all of those. Oh, wait. Oh, yeah, yeah. He wanted Viagra, so he went to his doctor and said, hey, doc, I need some Viagra. I'm taking an all-boys vacation to the Dominican Republic, and I need some Viagra. Would you mind giving it to me in a script that you've written for yourself? He did that.
You put it, that's the way we were raised. But the thing I have learned is that men are totally supportive. Today's young men are totally supportive of somebody else buying women their birth control pills.
Which, of course, is not the case. Birth control is treated as a matter of, and this is all discussed in the Hobby Lobby dissent, as a matter of general health policy. It's not asking someone to buy something for you. It is a non-discrimination provision. Just like the Viagra is. Just like the vasectomy is. Just like the Cialis is. But this is how an issue gets twisted by the right wing. By a guy who keeps his latest wife in a pit. I can make your life a living hell. It puts the lotion on its skin. Or else it gets the hose again. We'll be right back.
Because whatever... make sure the women are taken. Sex is what...
Wait, okay. We're going to go back.
Men
hold on. Young men are totally okay with this. The oxymoron can't conceive that perhaps young people are being raised and growing up. Don't plant them too deep. Young people, young men, may just possibly be growing up less bigoted. Than Flimball's generation. Less prejudiced. Less homophobic. Less sexist. No. It's not that. No, he understands. He knows the reason.
Totally supportive of somebody else buying women their birth control pills because whatever... make sure the women are taking sex is what it's all about.
Make sure the women are taking sex. Do tell us what else is going on inside your id flush.
Having pajama boy types are having sex. That's what it's all about. Everybody wants it, and what?
So you ever think about sex? Is it too big? Is it too small? Will the girls like it?
Whatever it takes to make it safe. And if the taxpayers, if it takes the tax...
Stupid. Contraceptives do not make sex safe. That's condoms. Birth control pills don't make sex safe. IUDs don't make sex safe. But of course, he is, like I said, this is his id. And what he's talking about is being able to have sex without the risk of pregnancy. That's how Flush Flimball defines safe sex. By the way, Flush Flimball has no kids. Talk amongst yourselves.
Taxpayers buying women birth control, the men are for it too. It's cheap insurance, and if this is what women want before they'll have sex, then fine. So this is the change. This that you and I were slow to arrive to because...
Well, I mean, you and the ditto heads are, well, yeah, I agree.
We were brought up with the idea that sex has consequences and that it's somewhat special and that...
Only somewhat. Three or four wives later. Somewhat special. Not as special as a Gulfstream 5.
But if you want something, you provide it yourself. You don't ask somebody else. That's all
you buy your own ticket on your all-boys weekend to the Dominican Republic where male child prostitution runs rampant. Sex is somewhat special. Yeah. Morons everywhere. And what goes with it? Oh, I got a moron. This guy's a real Lulu. They all are on Moron Monday, though, aren't they? Come on, tired old, not a Kickstarter computer. Load them up. Anytime. Let's try this again. God, there are pauses here you could roll coal through. No, that's not what I wanted. How did that happen? Ah, the whole thing's going to hell. Somehow or another, I got bounced out of chat even. Let's try this again. Here he is. This is just too charming. Every time you think the climate change denialists are stupid, well, one of them comes out and proves it. This, of course, coming from Kentucky Stan, where in their legislature they have a joint committee on, no, that's not what you think, on natural resources and the environment. It is run by Representative Jim Gooch. And they're all upset about them EPA rules that don't do anything about climate change at the source, you know, mountaintop removal sites and the like, but impose modest regulations upon emissions from coal-fired power plants, from which coal is frequently being excluded now because of frack gas and not tree huggers. Well, Jim Gooch, the chair of the committee, among other things, he's a secessionist. Oh, dear God. Well, he called a committee meeting. Again, to discuss those rules. He has suggested secession as a means of avoiding environmental regulations. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, my God. According to an outfit called Leo Weekly, out of Louisville, here are the words of Jim Gooch's colleague, Brandon Smith. We are an hour into the program, and I have not issued the warning, so this seems an appropriate time. Fetch thou thy hockey puck and a length of thine own duct tape. You will be wanting it. Hazard County, Kentucky, representing Brandon Smith. No, he's Senator Brandon Smith, because it's a joint committee. As you sit there in your chair with your data, we sit up here in ours with our data and our constituents and stuff behind us. No definition of what the stuff is. It is a joint committee. I don't want to get into the debate about climate change. So naturally, you know that that's exactly where he's going. But I will simply point out that I think in academia, we all agree that the temperatures on Mars is exactly as it is here. Nobody will dispute that, yet there are no coal mines on Mars. There are no factories on Mars that I'm aware of. Take a minute. Revel in it. Glory in it. Roll round and round and round in it. Or let that thing roll around like a marble in your own noggin. However you prefer, but cherish that. A man that real live, honest to goodness, not kidding, voters sent to Frankfort, Kentucky to represent them in the Kentucky State Senate believes, and that's the operative word, believes the single most dangerous language in all of the word in all of the English language believes that the temperature on Mars is the same as the temperature on Earth. There's no coal mines on Mars. The Leo blog noting that Senator Smith is only off by about 138 degrees Fahrenheit or so. Mars does have a carbon dioxide atmosphere. Yes, indeedy. We still have an oxygen atmosphere. Well said, Jim. More ends everywhere, and none available to think. It's about the size of it. It reminds me of this.
I got to thinking about something with regard to this whole business of CO2 can't possibly be a pollutant because it's good for you. It's in your soda pop. Remember? I mean, really, Republicans have made that argument on the floor of the House of Representatives. Well, I have a solution. Being as how I'm a firm believer in science, I say let's prove how good CO2 is for a human being. And I say we do it by reinvigorating the manned space exploration program. Mars does have an atmosphere. It most assuredly has an atmosphere. The only problem on Mars is that Mars has an atmosphere comprised of, wait for it, yes, CO2. It's just chock-a-block with CO2. There's lots of CO2 on Mars. Theoretically, if you could do something to keep water on Mars, and you could, just take some springtime bedding plants, you know, some petunias and peonies and marigolds and stuff, and if you could get water to them, there's enough CO2 there that you could plant, you could just plant Mars, and the next thing you know, you got an oxygen atmosphere, right? But who needs oxygen when you have Republicans? I say that Barack Obama should reinvigorate the manned Republican exploration of space. We need to send Republicans to Mars. It's the red planet. They're the red party, red state. I'm liking this more and more. And we won't even have to spend money on spacesuit gear for them. Because they're Republicans and they know that CO2 is good for you, so they can just hop right out of the spaceship and say, Lafayette, we are here! And just get busy breathing that CO2 that's so damn good for them. I think we should build and send an entire fleet of transport ships filled with Republicans to go and populate Mars. because they apparently have some sort of inbuilt, maybe inbred, special ability to breathe and extract the oxygen from CO2. Man, that's a great slogan. Mars needs Republicans. Wow, we're on to something here. Just start queuing them up to the spaceships. Yeah, yeah. There's no liberals there. You can set up a free market economy. You can have pure 100% guaranteed capitalism just as soon as you figure out how to breathe CO2, because it's good for you, CO2 is. Just ask Joe Barton and Michelle Bachmann. Just don't. And they're going to be there, too. They're going to be your leaders. This is a beautiful thing. And I think it's something that all Americans can get behind. I think the Republicans would get behind it. They'd get to live on a planet where none of us filthy liberals were. I think this has tremendous potential.
It absolutely does. Barack Obama, get your executive order pen out and re-up the human inclusive spaceflight program. Because I think Kentucky State Senator Brandon Smith, well, I think you found your mission commander. Hell, he's not even going to need a spacesuit. He can take a pair of board shorts and a luau shirt and be right at home because it's the same temperature on Mars as it is here. Oh, my jeebus. Yeah. Oh, Jim's feeling his oats. Mars, they're already on Uranus. And women's ovaries. Ay, ay. And then there's, well, no, I tell you what, let's take our break. By the way, we are well on the way to deepening the hole. We started the program needing to raise $210, and thus far in the program, as 73 minutes into it, we have raised zero. So, yeah, there you go. I played the Flimball clip. Tim from L.A. with an email. This is what the right listens to? Yes, Tim, yes. Flush Flimball sounds like George Bush, you know, that dry, drunk slur. I heard Rush before, and he had a decent command of the English language. Now he sounds as though he's having a stroke, or maybe the overdose of OxyContin's damaged his brain. As for his bootstrap speak, apparently the $50 million he's making isn't from Clear Channel and advertisers, but him being subsidized from political groups. So I guess the old-school bullshit is merely bullshit. Limbaugh is a loser. And king of the morons. Yeah, well, we kind of grandfathered him out because of that, Tim. But every now and then, it's hard to resist. We've been more successful grandmothering away Godzilla from Wasilla. So let's take a break. And give you a chance to light up the phone, if you wish. Asa in Vancouver pointing out, Bob, Senator Smith just sped right up Stupid Boulevard and hung a left on Dumbass Lane. That is stupidity of titanic proportions. I know, but how do you... I held it for Moran Monday. I couldn't hold it anymore. My hands were beginning to get hot. Aye. So anyway, we'll take a break, and you can hot up the phone, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178 is the number to dial in. If you just want to reach out Skype to Skype, you can do that too. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact address. If you've never sent a contact request, you should if you wish to reach out that way. There's no charge at all for Skype to Skype. I'm not sure about, well, it depends upon your plan entirely as to whether there's a charge to call 304-574-8178. We'll take a break and come back to your call and your conversation because this is listener-supported, he said, emphasizing the listener part and the supported part of listener-supported conversation radio. This here is indeed The Horn. I hate songs with slow fade-ins. There it is.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
7, 6.
Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition, and may God's love
lift
be
off
with you.
This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know. Now it's time.
could I not? Really? Space oddity? If suggesting that Earth and Mars don't, Earth and Mars have the same temperature is not a space oddity, there ain't no space oddities. It is 21 minutes past the hour on this, the 7th day of July, the end of the first full week of July, 2014. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. And I do believe we have Bill with us. Hey, Bill.
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
Oh, I'm feeling pretty decent for me. Saturday night I went to a little party out way out in the east side of, the next county east, and a couple of the guitar players that were there, the guys who recorded the first record with me, the first one I released, and so we had a good time sitting and playing. I hadn't had a chance to do that for a while, because I don't like playing much for live audiences anymore, you know. I like
pain
to have fun
ass.
With it. I did enough work, you know.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, and it was a good night. And a buddy of mine was working on a CD copy of a book written by a guy named Max Hastings, an English history writer, and concerns itself with the first altercation of the century, the first big one, which is something I'm always, well, like you, I'm always looking for more information about that one, you know, because it's kind of hidden from us because we did not take as big a part in it. Oh, I think a lot of American companies took a big part in it, making a lot of money, you know, working, supplying people with stuff, and I got a good one-liner. Had a book on the town bomb thing in Prussia, you know, in the First World War. And one guy was just giving a lecture, and he says, "Well, here's where General von Hindenburg slept the night before the battle, and here's the night he slept after the battle, and over here's where he slept during the battle." That's just, okay, I'll take that. That's my sense of humor to a degree, you know. But so you took the family out to a drive-in movie. God, I haven't been to one of those in years.
Oh, it was fun, Bill. It was a blast.
You said you saw. What did you see? I didn't catch that.
Oh, I didn't say. It was actually a double feature. Oh. The first one was a sort of family-friendly affair called How to Train Your Dragon 2. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. It had a great message. It was well written, well done. The animation was wonderful, and the little ones were absolutely transfixed by it. The second half of the double feature was X-Men Days of Furniture Polish. No, X-Men Days of Future Past or something like that. Ferg and I had already seen that one, and we weren't going to keep the little ones out that late. So we went ahead and took a powder on it.
Yeah, what I used to love about it was the commercials in between movies, you know. 10 minutes left, still plenty of time for fresh hot popcorn, you know. And, oh, God, they spiel that to the whole down time, you know.
Well, it's not the $10 a carload that it used to be or whatever. It's
No.
But I always wind up learning something wherever I go. And I walked into the concession stand where the buckets of popcorn were $3, and it was an extra 80 cents if you wanted the artery-clogging, butter-flavored goo on it. And of course, who doesn't want the butter-flavored goo?
Yes, sir.
But I told him, you know, we're just having this is a wonderful time. I'm so glad this is here. And she said, well, enjoy it while you can. We may not be here next year. And I said, why? I mean, look, I mean, everybody's out there. You're full up. I mean, and they were.
Right, yes.
And she said, all of the film distribution is moving to digital projection.
Oh, boy, here we go again. There's got to be a reason for it, and electronically somebody could tell me, I'm sure.
It's a commercially
good reason.
Well, I'm sure the commercial reason is there's no sense in coming up with two different formats. Just for the wee tiny handful of drive-in movie theaters. And she went on to tell me, she said, you know, we're open for 36 days a year. And there's no way we can justify spending $80,000 on a new digital projector.
Yeah. Boy, another piece of the metal kind of bites the dust. The drive-in restaurant with the young ladies on roller skates, and sometimes I think it must be Methuselah. I've seen all this crap go past me. You know, all these different forms and functions. One of our listeners turned me on to some radio shows on the net, old radio stuff. It's like, my God, I'm laying there thinking, Billy, you probably heard this the first time around, you know. But what I like about the old radio commercials is you get a good look at the thinking of the country. Like the chanting voices singing the post-toast, you heat good cornflakes. Yeah. God almighty, they got away with this kind of blatant idiocy, and people bought it.
Well,
you know?
Because to a certain extent, I've got a little bit of tolerance and forgiveness, Bill, for ignorance as long as we grow past it. You don't learn by doing everything right. You learn by getting stuff wrong and having people say, you know, this is wrong, let's not do it this way.
I mean, there's a certain amount of, and there's a certain amount of maybe what you want to call a certain thing that isn't true, but if you ask the average person up here in the city who makes the best barbecued ribs, Slovenian? No. Italian? No.
No, no.
Oh.
But that's
how
not...
How about a black American?
Well, but that's not a racial stereotype.
No.
I'm not going to go to a German joint for a great plate of pasta. Nor do I expect to order kick-ass Wiener Schnitzel in a Caribbean restaurant.
Exactly. That's one of the things that used to make a big city like Cleveland a real great place to be, because there was an ethnic restaurant where you could go and get a good taste of something that you didn't get every day. And like when they used to have these rib burn-offs, and they still have them. But from what I can gather now, there's a whole troop of traveling professionals that follow a circuit, Bob. They're in this city one week, and the same guys basically are in another city the next weekend. But it used to be here in Cleveland that we had a couple of days of the week when the ladies from the churches would bring in homemade stuff, you know?
And that was worthwhile going for because it was homemade. We just passed the Independence Day weekend, and I took a moment to sort of long and yearn for the place where I grew up, because all the churches, and I mean all the churches, and it's just tradition. I hope it still obtains down there. They do two things on Memorial Day, Labor Day, and 4th of July.
Yep.
They all have sales of two things, chicken stew and barbecue, and it's kind of neat that it rhymes. My parents had never had chicken stew before in their lives until they moved down there from West Virginia. And I dare say there's a lot of folks that don't necessarily know what it is, but my God, it's wonderful. It's like a beef stew, but it's made with chicken.
Or Greek. That Greek chili, the chili they put on chili dogs, and, you know, in some of the big city restaurants in Cleveland, no beans, you know, nothing like that. But it's a different tasting chili, and my daughter, who was adopted out by her rich mother, and, you know, that was one of those, I'll vent some anger, you know. Musician's a good thing to spend time with, but, don't marry the guy. You know, he's a bum. Don't marry him. So, anyway, my daughter pops up in my life when I'm 51 years old. It was good.
Oh, and now but, you mentioned the idea of chili without beans. Is that a Cleveland thing then?
Well, my daughter was raised by a Greek family, and she said this tasted like Greek spaghetti sauce to her. And
I was raised that a chili dog is a hot dog that's got chili on it, and no, you leave the beans out but it tastes like chili. Now you get up here into West Virginia, Bill, and they don't even call it chili anymore. They call it sauce.
Yeah.
And it's ground beef, and it's a red sauce, but it doesn't taste like chili anymore, and it can even be kind of sweet. And then what you described as Greek spaghetti sauce sounds like what they sell down in southern Ohio.
Yep. Down in Cincinnati?
Yeah. That's all sweet, and it's got a cinnamon overtone, and they serve it on pasta. Yeah. Gold Star, Skyline, that stuff. I think we've discussed it in the past.
Well, there's a place in downtown Detroit that had two of the hot dog places side by side. One was Lafayette. Coney Island, and I think the other was called American Coney Island. And I think you can still find Lafayette on the internet because you can buy large selections. You can buy a whole ton of stuff if you want to have a special event or something, you know. But because those places were so strange, you went out the door one end of the other one. I've had some funny experiences in Detroit. I was up there one night and went to a place that I eventually worked at, and the next morning, I wake up and pick up a paper, and there's a plane that crashed. And in the plane was Otis Redding and the horn group that he was traveling with, the Barcades, I guess they were called at the time.
Yeah.
And so you don't forget certain aspects of time, you know. That was 1967. Because I had spent some time, the night before, I had spent some time with the MC5 and a burned-out office building on Plum Street, which was part of the 67 mess. It's like Hooker, John Lee Hooker, does a thing called the Motor City's Burning, and everybody thought it was written about the 60s. It was written about the 40s, because there was another riotous incident in Detroit, I think in 46, around a place called Belle Isle. If you're familiar with that at all, but you know, it was typical of, you know, you had all these folks from all over the country coming around for work, and a lot of them, just like the Europeans, a lot of them brought their own grief and dislike for other people with them when they came up here. Cleveland was loaded with them. The one big area had three groups of people, and it's interesting. They were Slovenes, Italians, and Irish. Now, all three, Caucasians, and all three of them Catholic. And then, yep, they staged some pretty good adventures themselves.
Oh, I can imagine.
We just had one up here, you know, that was interesting. It made me think of going to see a movie, and I think it was 56, maybe 57, called A Girl Can't Help It.
Oh, golly Moses.
With, what's her name, Jean Mansfield was in it.
Yeah.
Tom Ewell. And a ton of rock and roll performers. And here's all these 8th, 9th, 10th graders down there to see. And, of course, somebody's got to say something to somebody else that's wrong. Like, hello, you know. That's all it took in those days to start them. Because it was a thing that was like Blackboard Jungle. Did you ever see that movie?
Yes. Oh, yes, of course.
Glenn Ford, I believe it was. And Bill Haley provided the soundtrack. There's Rock Around the Clock. You know, Haley was a kind of a country and western musician from Pennsylvania. And somehow he recorded that thing, and it went big for him. But, yeah, I just keep getting to the point, Bible, where I'm just, I don't know anymore. I'd say it's partly because I'm old, and I'm just, I don't think you'll ever change these folks. It's a shame. What's it going to take to change it? Because they can say all they want to. The racist element is having a field day with Mr. Obama, President Obama. But they'll have a... If Hillary were to win the election...
Oh, you mentioned... I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that's another nominee for Moran Monday this evening. I don't know if you heard about this. Yeah. In Norfolk, Nebraska, this past weekend, they had their annual 4th of July parade, right?
Of
course. 4th of July parades all over the country. This one, though, featured a float being pulled on a flatbed by some pickup truck, and the float consisted of an outhouse with Barack Obama.
Oh, for God's sake.
And when it came by, everybody watching the parade just laughed and laughed and hooted and hollered.
It's like, how dumb can our society get to the point where it's, you know, there's no place else to go, I don't think, really, to get, well, there is if you're young enough and can get on a ship to a deserted island.
And of course, there was, I saw something earlier today, and it wasn't done from a right-wing standpoint. There's some sort of alternative newspaper in New York City that ran an editorial, and I warn in advance because there's no way to get around it. I'm going to give the headline of the editorial. The title of the editorial, and I apologize for even saying the word, is "The Nigger in the White House." And the guy was trying to make the point that there's a lot of people in this country who view the President of the United States exactly that way, or as the more genteel types would put it, Bill, our non-traditional president.
Well, I'm an old person, you know, what age-wise, and that still angers me to the point of I learned differently a long time ago. There was one positive thing about growing up in a rather economically deprived area. Well, first of all, both of the first projects in this country, Eleanor Roosevelt herself came in to cut the ribbon on them. And the following year, they opened one by the lake for the Irish folk that had been struggling along and doing stevedore work. And, you know, they got great treatment too, the Irish. And they didn't want to, I guess everybody thought, They treated the Irish good. They didn't want them to get a job, you know. No Irish need apply, you know. So hell, look, we're treating them good. We can be lazy bums. We don't want them to work. What bothers me, Bob, is you cannot seem to reason with people, and that's what's so scary to me. Is that I feel for you guys. You do. I don't know if I'll be at peace. I'll be somewhere else. And you guys will still have to be battling with this stuff. And I don't know. What do you think? There's any chance that anything can... Because they've destroyed the economy. And, you know, I keep telling people, Alexander Hamilton will be having a hemorrhage. Because he wrote, when they wrote that trade stuff, they set it up so if you wanted to bring your stuff in and keep Americans out of a job, keep your fellow citizens out of a job, you had to pay a lot more to get that stuff in here. Which meant that, you know, the profit, the chance to make money was less. And the chance to make money is less, people do it less. But now, who's behind these trade deals, Bob? What? Who's pulling the strings on these trade deals where they can go and work somebody to death in Bangladesh, which is bad enough, but they take a job away from one of the people here, and of course, the less tax money, I'm so evil. I see a tie-in between the loss of tax revenue and the increase in traffic and violations, and this violation and that violation.
See, I read with some excitement today, and I know Rick Smith talked about it this afternoon too. That there's a Teamsters strike underway in Los Angeles. Not that you're going to hear much about it on the for-profit media, maybe a little bit. But the thing is, as long as you don't report too much on it, people won't feel solidarity. But guess where these particular Teamsters who drive these particular container trucks off of the container ships, guess where most of the crap goes?
No idea.
Target and Walmart.
Oh, yeah, now it makes sense, yeah. because that's where, and are you old enough to remember Sam Walton proudly advertising his Always products were?
Oh, I remember when Wally World's logo always had an American flag beside it. Now, Wally World was still a sleazy company to work for that underpaid its workers and abused them. And I've mentioned this before. I remember the news story coming across the radio several years ago that Sam Walton's very first employee had finally died. And that person died without a pension and died without health care. I mean, beyond Medicare, of course, but yeah.
And most Americans don't know how other countries have pensions. And well, Bismarck put a pension through in Germany in the 1880s, and I wouldn't call Otto von Bismarck much of a, I sure wouldn't call him a liberal.
Actually, I mean, it is politically okay to call him that. Because the reforms he instituted were classically liberal reforms.
Yeah.
Never mind the motivation. Never mind the fact that the motivation was for the purpose of keeping people from rising up like they had in 1848 and succeeding this time.
And also to keep them ready to go swing a rifle and, you know, to make the country more powerful. And they say I have some great stories of how people. Well, I used to go to Canada quite a bit to fish. Yeah, I love to stop in Niagara. There was a Hungarian place with a Zimbalm player and a Black Forest platter. I remember the first time I went up there, me and my first wife, we cleaned that platter. The waitress comes over and says, you know, most people don't finish that. Oh, excuse me. It's embarrassing, isn't it? But you go there and you spend 2 or 3 days in Toronto where they had a record store where you could buy all kind of traditional jazz and blues. They buy it up there. They didn't sell it here in a lot of stores. But you go fishing with some of those folks that were first citizens of Canada, and hell, you just talk to people on the street, Kyle. They seem to like their health care. I don't know where this, what's his name, Dinesh D'Idiot, or whatever the hell.
Dinesh D'Idiot. That's exactly who that is, Bill.
Where do they find these people? How many rocks
it's not a picking up rocks thing, Bill. It's a privilege thing. In fact, an early nominee this weekend is the youngest ever guy to be given a column at the hallowed offices of the New York Times. The creepy little dude by the name of Ross Douthat, okay? D-O-U-T-H-A-T. And this guy is he's a thinking conservative. And what passes for thinking conservative in his world is
I didn't know he had a list, Bob. Oh, he's thinking. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he had written editorials for the Harvard Crimson while he was at Harvard. He's a son of privilege. And so he was hired at 30 or 32 years old to write his own column for the New York Times to be the conservative voice. As if, you know, Thomas Friedman wasn't already writing for them.
Yeah.
That's a question whose answer I simply cannot fathom, Bill. Why does the New York Times need a conservative voice? Well, the reason they need a conservative voice, as best as I can figure out, is because right-wingers way back 10, 20, 30 years ago, maybe more, started bemoaning the liberal media back when the media were nothing if not pretty much middle of the road. But they hollered liberal media so loud and so long that media institutions like the Times began to believe that maybe they were. So we've got to let the Luddites and the idiots and the fools have a column for themselves.
Now,
sure. Now, recently, on the other hand, the BBC, with whom I have a More In Monday issue, by the way. The BBC have issued, or has, I'm not sure, has, yeah, has.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Has issued a directive that no longer will they be bringing people on air every time they talk about climate change. They won't be bringing on some lunatic to talk about how, not really, the earth is getting colder, there ain't no global warming. They're not going to do that anymore. They're just not going to do it, they say. Because it's because it is journalistically it is contrary to any notion of journalistic integrity.
Yeah, there's this idea. I mean, and who killed the Equal Time thing?
That's the so-called
the movie actor.
Yeah, that's the so-called fairness doctrine that was beaten by that greasy greasy-headed old B movie actor.
It's funny how I've heard a couple guys, left-wing talkers, play positive commercials he made for Harry Truman in the 48 race. Boy, I think if you marry correctly, you see, when your own career is taking the tubes and you marry money, then all of a sudden your political tastes and interests change too, don't they?
Maybe you've got an axe to grind. Maybe you tried to join the Communist Party in Hollywood in the 1930s, and everybody blackballed you because you were such an odious human being. Maybe that.
A good number of people who joined the Communist Party in the 30s, especially in the working class, they were people without a job and they didn't know where to turn. They could have turned that way, or they could have turned, like they did in Germany, to the far right, or, you know, the fascists or the Nazis, or, you know, any kind of a dictatorship's, when things are tough, they've got a good shot at getting a herd. When economic times are tough. You start, how will I eat? Well, let me listen to, Father Coughlin at one time had a somewhat positive influence, and then all of a sudden he seemed to go funny too. Or am I wrong about him? I'm just going by his earliest.
Not sure. The rest of the Horn family will have to chime in on that one.
Well, yeah, I hope so. But Limbaugh, for instance, that guy, he was a failed disc jockey, was he?
Yes, he was. In fact, he was told in Pittsburgh to get a job in sales, that he was never going to make it as a jock.
Yeah. And then he went and sold. He was a PR man for a baseball team.
The Royals, correct.
Pardon me?
The Royals, yes.
Yeah, but didn't his father have some political pull back in Missouri?
Yeah, they're an old family from Cape Girardeau.
Yep.
I think his dad owned a radio station, or his family owned a radio station, and his grandfather was a federal judge or something.
Okay. There's so much of that stuff. Well, I'll leave you with a little humor. My mother's mother immigrated here from Germany about 1900 and married an American, a machinist, of course, and she used to always introduce herself as Mrs. Myers von Penrose. Penrose was the street she lived on. So she made a joke out of the whole German von deal, you know. Which means from, doesn't it, Bob? Isn't it where the von comes from? Well, it's a titular thing, you know. I think every damn German general in World War I was von somebody or the other.
Well, that's a social convention. Akin to being sir sir something or another in Great Britain. Getting the VON, the von, added to one's name admitted one to the Prussian nobility.
Yeah, well, my grandmother had a sick sense of humor, and she, I guess much wasn't said during World War II about the Holocaust, because my mother said that her mother, my grandmother, was just drowning in her own tears, thank you, Mr. Charles. When the stuff came out about, she said, what happened to the Germany that I left? She told my mother there was at a patriotic day, there was all kind of guys walking around with medals, military medals, who were of Jewish extraction. It's just, you know, it just struck her as like, what the hell happened here? Because it wasn't, you know, that, I mean, it wasn't what it was always, for some reason, I had this theory that two or three of the countries that entered the world late, like, when did Germany unite? About 1870, totally?
Yeah, somewhere around in there.
And Japan didn't come out from behind the Mikado until, well, 1904, they fought the Russians. Boy, that's a book I'd love to get my hands on, something on that Russia-Japanese war. Well, didn't Jack London cover that?
Yeah, Jack London, and so did noted Appalachian author John Fox.
Mm-hmm. That's, that was their introduction to the world. And, you know, Japan sided with the Allies in World War One. They brought their navy out, and one place they took was that famous little place where they make that funny-sounding beer, Tsingtao. That was a German naval base, and the Germans got the hell out of there. And the Japanese launched an attack on it, and the Japanese seized a lot of islands in the Pacific. The Solomons, I think, they received that had, quote, belonged to Germany. And the Solomons have a very famous place that I think I'll let you call the name of it. It's started with Guada.
Yeah.
And ended with Canal.
Right.
Yeah. Because, in other words, here it is, the end of the earliest days of the 20th century. These bigger powers were running around. It's like, why, you know where Royal Dutch Shell comes from, don't you?
Sure.
Yep. Well, Indonesia, and then that country's had several. The Dutch East Indies would start there, and then Indonesia, I don't know what they call it now. And the other classic example was Singapore. The British had a big base in Singapore, and there's only one problem, Bob. All those big guns in Singapore were embedded in concrete and facing
pointed the wrong way.
Yeah, that's the story of my life. Pointed the wrong way. I'll let you go now and pick the right way and get off the phone. People will say, good, for once Bill's taking the right way. I'm going to take off.
Take care, Bill. Have a good evening. Bye now.
Good night.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. And 6 minutes before the hour, we're coming up on 2 hours into the program. Thank you, Sal. Thank you, Sal, very, very much. Sal's there most every evening, and he got us started on our fundraising this evening. It is much appreciated. Thank you, Sal. And so we find ourselves with $205 yet to raise this evening, and I'm sure Sal would love some company. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Well, hey, Edward.
You were talking about food and stewed chicken and everything.
No, not stewed chicken. Chicken stew.
Well, chicken stew.
It's a different animal. I mean, not the animal, but the.
Well, my grandmother used to make it, and it was so good. And she did chicken and dumplings.
Okay, so what was the chicken stew like? Because you're coming out of North Carolina, that tradition, and I want to know.
I have no idea what she did to it, but it was some kind of good.
Every time I've ever had it, it's chicken that's been cooked to make a good chicken broth.
Yeah, thick broth, yeah.
And then you take the chicken out and you shred the chicken off the bone. There's no bones involved. It goes back in with a bay leaf and some tomatoes and some corn, maybe some lima beans or some peas, and a whole bunch of spices that the little old blue haired ladies would rather die than give you. And from church to church to church, it's a little different, and it's all wonderful.
They all have the recipes. But this concerns World War II. When the war first started, they didn't have any bases down there, and so they were down there, sent all these men down, to build Cherry Point, Camp Lejeune, Vogue Field, Atlantic Field, and all of those. And they asked the people there in the town if they had any extra bedrooms or anything to please let these men have these rooms. And so my grandmother did. She had four bedrooms upstairs and big double beds in each room, and she had two men to a bed there. And, of course, she also fed them, cooked them breakfast, and made lunch to take with them. They were building Camp Lejeune, I think, in Cherry Point at the time. And then they came home in the evening, and she fixed supper for them. Well, we all love turtle. And the fishermen would, every now and then, if they caught a turtle, they'd bring it to my granddaddy. And he had a pen made for him. He put in this pen, had a big basin of water, and he'd feed him carrots and celery and lettuce and things for a couple of weeks, and then he'd butcher them, and my grandmother would cook them, just like she did her chicken. And so this one evening, she had cooked turtle and dumplings. And these guys from up north, the Yankees, they just slurped it up. And after dinner, one of them came into the kitchen and said, "Mrs. Garner, that's the best chicken and dumpling I've ever had." And she says, "It's not chicken." He says, "What is it?" She says, "It's turtle." They never ask again, but they ate the food.
Boy, turtle's good.
I know it's good. I like it. I haven't had it since I had hers.
Oh, I haven't had turtle anything in forever. But you know, chicken is the sort of standard of all meat. If it tastes like chicken, it's edible.
Yeah.
And so, alligator tastes like chicken.
Rattlesnake
tastes like chicken.
We have a Cajun friend who's an artist. And we go to his shows and everything, and he always makes a great big pot of gumbo, and it has alligator in it. And it's also hotter than hell. It'll blow the top of your head off.
Oh, my God, I bet that is good.
Oh, honey, it's good. Oh, dear, I'm calling you honey again. I got to quit that.
I take no offense, Edward.
Well, I can't get that. You can get the boy out of the South, but you can't get the South out of the boy.
Oh, don't I know. Don't I know. Why do you reckon I'm sitting around pining for chicken stew?
Well, oh, and by the way, my partner makes chicken and noodles, which is some kind of good, and they're homemade noodles. You stew the chicken like you do for stewed chicken, and then you mix them and the noodles together. And this is an old Kansas dish that you serve to the guys who came through with the thrashing machines and everything, and they needed some sustenance. And what you do is you make mashed potatoes with milk and butter and everything, put a blob right in the middle of the plate, make a hole in it, and then put the chicken and noodles on top of that.
I'll jump back.
It's some kind of good.
I think I'd go out to the South 40 and thresh me a little wheat just for the privilege of having that for lunch.
Oh, my. In fact, I just took a lemon meringue pie out of the oven.
Oh.
I have holler
as quick as it's cool.
I sure will. You all take care and have a good evening.
You have a wonderful evening, Edward. And
thank
I reckon it's gotten to hot and miserable in Dallas, so stay cool into the bargain.
Oh, well, we're used to it, so anyway. But anyway, if you ever have stewed turtle and dumplings, take my dear grandmother. She died
absolutely
in 1945.
Absolutely, and do not complain.
Oh, I won't. I won't complain.
Take care, Edward. Bye now.
Bye.
I wouldn't turn down a pot of stewed turtle dumplings. Oh, heck no. I do draw the line at things like possum and groundhog and such like, but yeah. Turtle? Mm-mm. No. And thus, on this Moran Monday, we also work in a little bit of non-moranity in the form of some food porn. Yum. Yum. Under tooled leather. Thanks very much to Robert. Robert, thank you very kindly for jumping out there and getting alongside alongside Sal and helping out with the fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly. That takes us to $195 to go. $195 in the next 59 minutes, if that is at all humanly possible. And I sure hope so, so that we'll just stay even with where we need to be. Let's see, checking in on the, I check in on the chat room from time to time to see what's happening. If you want to jump into the conversation, do please feel free. The number, of course, 304-574-8178, and you are welcome to participate in the conversation. Everybody's friends here. Now, I said I have a I have a bit of a bone to pick with the BBC. And this is not a gripe with the subject matter, but with word choice and what how to put this. It's a matter of word choice, and it's a matter of, I guess, somehow, to my mind, prettying up a very ugly situation. So the headline of the story itself from the BBC is, "Search for Honduran miners continues amid fading hopes." Okay? "Search for Honduran miners continues amid fading hopes." And in impoverished regions of the world, you will find stories like this more and more often. Oh, God, over the weekend, some horrifying number of Chinese people were killed in a coal mine blast. As noted, and this doesn't just apply to the factories where people work, working conditions in China are often horrifying, and it is those working conditions that the fine, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians who run Hobby Lobby work to perpetuate through their commerce, you know, their Christian commerce. Hundreds of people die per day in work-related accidents in China. Some of those people die in god-awful gassy holes in the ground from which they extract coal. But coal is not the only thing you have to dig a hole in the ground to get at. As we know, for instance, from a study of the assault and colonization of Mesoamerica and Central America, and from North and South America as well, the French, Portuguese, Spanish, English, and Dutch who came to the New World, Jesus, what a phrase, came looking for a cure to their sickness. The Spanish admitted it outright to their native victims. They came to Mesoamerica and said they had a sickness of the heart that could only be cured by gold. And it took the indigenous people a little while to realize that the sickness the Spanish were describing was plain old-fashioned common garden variety. Greed. A sickness of the heart which can only be cured by gold. And there was, and has been, gold in the region. And sadly, there still is. There are deposits down under the ground where little nuggets of gold can be held out of the earth, can be dug out in homemade mines where workers will climb down ladders as much as 200 meters to get at seams in the hopes of... Nobody's there to get rich. This is sustenance work. One of those mines collapsed. At least 8 gold miners at least 8 gold miners were trapped, and they are rapidly closing in on that mark where you presume them dead. It happened near El Corpus, about 70 miles south of Tegucigalpa, the capital of Honduras. What happened to trap them is as simple as a landslide. The earth caved in and blocked the tunnel exit and left the men trapped at about 260 feet into the earth. Now, here's the bone I have to pick. The BBC writes of the collapse in its lead sentence as follows. Hopes of finding 8 miners trapped in an artisanal gold mine in southern Honduras are fading, rescuers say, as they continue their search. Artisanal coal mine, or gold mine, artisanal gold mine. Now, this is an ad hoc gold mine being dug to try to wrest enough precious metal from the ground to keep families from starving to death. And the BBC describes it as artisanal. And that just smacks of a little too much privilege for my taste. Why not subsistence gold mine? Why not ad hoc gold mine? Why not improvised gold mine? Artisanal gold mine? Or am I getting this wrong? Is there something called artisanal gold? Gold that is scrounged out of the earth and passed on to some artisan? I sincerely doubt that. Artisanal gold mine. Until you have heard your children cry from hunger in the night, it is probably best not to describe any poverty-based, desperate effort to survive as artisanal. You know, here in the privileged West, we talk of things like artisanal hand-milled grits. Anson Mills comes to mind. Artisanal tomato juice. Artisanal herb gardens. Artisanal, I take it, adds a little bit to the price of the goods produced. It's an artisanal vineyard, Muffy. They produce only a few bottles, and, well, the lucky few who can get them really have something. Oh, I do hope I can get myself a Rolex made with some of that artisanal gold. Those really are artisans going 260 feet below the earth to dig out little hunks of gold from the very rock itself. Artisanal. Pisses me off. Moran Monday nomination for the BBC. Yeah. All right, then. Let's go to the phone. Say, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm well, Jim. How are you?
Okay. Glad you had a good fourth.
It was just lovely. Nothing fancy at all, just lovely, a lovely time being with family.
Well, that's the best way to spend these things, you know. Particularly a drive-in. I haven't heard of a drive-in in I don't know how long.
Yeah, I think there are actually 2 still in the state of West Virginia.
Oh, my. Not to detract from your previous story about those miners. I certainly hope they can be rescued. Having spent 3 months in Honduras, well, that's just a place you don't want to be.
No. No. And see, the part of the dovetail to this, Jim, is that the latest right-wing outrage is that there Obama has opened our borders to and invited in a whole bunch of little undocumented illegal children. And of course we know that the children, and they are coming, they're coming to the United States, and they are traversing the entire nation of Mexico, which is no small feat. And they're coming from primarily Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, where life is so awful that parents will send their children walking in hopes that they can simply get to somewhere where they can survive. Because the parents realize, if the children have parents, that they're not going to survive in Guatemala, Honduras, or El Salvador.
No, it's not a very environmental or any other way friendly place. I mean, that's the home of the one step.
Define, please.
Well, it's a mamba. You take one step, and you're at the pearly gates. That's it. That's what they call it, a one step.
At the end of a strand of hemp and sisal, or sisal hemp.
Whatever. It just kills you. That's it. And if you're in a place that's in the outer regions, I don't think there's a whole lot they can do, really. I mean, I'm not sure if it's I was briefed on this before I went down there, whether it's a hemotoxin or a neurotoxin, but it's just a state that if you're bitten, you're going to die. And that place is just loaded with them.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's the place that, we were briefed very thoroughly before I went down there for a program called Strong Roads. We were building, the Army was building roads in Honduras and stuff like that. And of course, there were some other things going on down there that I'm not going to even bother to discuss, because that would make you even feel worse. But anyway, going back to drive-ins, I'm glad there are two left here. And I can remember a lot of tricks that we used to play then with drive-ins.
Yeah?
Well, that's when you get somebody who would get in the trunk of the car and you put some ketchup on his hand and hanging out the back. I can guarantee you one thing, you get some attention with that. we did that a few occasions. Of course, you know, there's another trick. You go into the drive-in where you pull up to pay window, and you get the guy you were playing trick on, and then all of a sudden, well, he'd be playing a trick on you. You pull up at the pay window, then he'd start beating on the hood of the trunk of the car, and that would cause a little consternation. Anyway, films are films, and they are certainly subject to be enjoyed. But the best story I can tell you about a film didn't occur in a drive-in.
Yeah?
And this was when I first started teaching school. And, you know, as a teacher, you would order films from the central office.
Yes.
And the central office would be sent out to the schools. Well, apparently at the central office at Richland District 1 in Columbia, they had a disenchanted point, a disaffected, discollected employee who worked with films. And there was one film that was sent to my school called The Spirit of Rome. I don't know if you ever saw it. It was a very good film. But this guy, knew he was leaving, and he was upset because he had to leave, had found, I don't know how many scores of feet of an old 16-millimeter Stag film.
Oh, no.
And, of course, they would have, you know, they in order to save time and stuff like that, they would show the films in the auditorium, you know, to all the classes and stuff that were, you know, we're talking about a third of the student body, half the student body.
Oh, yeah, my elementary school days had two, and it was a big deal when they fired up the projector and all the kids were brought into the elementary school auditorium. Two films stand out in my mind. One was a Disney thing called Nature's Half Acre.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was Old Yeller.
Yeah, I remember that one. I hated that film because of what happened to the dog. I really did. But nonetheless, this guy had spliced in that film to that movie, The Spirit of Rome. Now, you talk about an upset. There was an upset. I mean, all of a sudden you were listening to this, you know, film about Roman architecture, Roman culture, this, that, and the other. And here comes at least probably 80 feet of a 16-millimeter Stag film. And it took quite a bit to calm those kids down.
I can well imagine. I don't think any amount of exercise in the gymnasium is going to work past that, Jim.
I literally fell on the floor.
As in fainted dead away, or
just to get out of whatever was going to be flying over, or
incoming,
incoming, exactly, and. And then, of course, you know, they had this big problem with that. And later it came out, all the bulletins that were published from the central office that there was an apology. I mean, these kids went home and told their parents. You know, they'd seen, you know, all this sex and stuff in this film. And, you know, what could they do? But, I mean, it just proves what... If you mess with somebody and mess with their job and make them happy enough to do that, well, boy, they can sure throw a shoe in the machine, can't they?
Oh, big time. I'll bet there were some apologies.
To tell you the truth, the reason I just sort of ducked down behind because I was biting my hand so hard to keep from laughing. I mean, what the hell was I supposed to do?
Yeah, that's straight out of the street. Don't look, Ethel! But it was too late.
It was incredible. And you can imagine some of these old school marms who were just like basically having to get the ammonia and whatever they could. I think probably most of them should have had some amyl nitrate. Or some poppers or something. They really wanted to get off talking. But I will never forget that. And that gentleman down there, whoever sent that film out, re-spliced, I don't know if they ever caught him or whatever, or have proved it or whatever, but that thing, years later, is still talked about.
Oh, and probably will be for... You know, another couple of hundred years at least.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's something that people just couldn't believe it. I went home and told my parents about it. They said, hey, all right? And my mother looked at my father, and she said, yeah, as if you don't know anything about those types of 16-millimeter films.
Hello, Jim. Can I interest you in a petard?
No, thank you. It's already lit. It's already gone off. Thank you very much. Another thing I saw tonight, and it's about Detroit and that water situation. That's just absolutely inhuman. I mean, they have a water company there that has allowed water to drain into a park that is destroying the park itself, and the water company has not even bothered to shut the water off, and it's been going on for I don't know how long. And yet they're wasting all this water that could be used by people and allowing it to drain into a park for which there is no use, and it's being destructive. And there are two stadiums there that have huge water bills, and their water hadn't been cut off.
No, hell no.
And, you know, these, right now there's an even United Nations petition that's been filed against that. I mean, what a way to try to repopulate a city.
Right, or depopulate.
Apparently, that must... anyway, apparently, there was some type of... I don't know who runs the water in that city, but it's not being done properly, and there are a lot of very thirsty people who have not had water for months. And the only thing they're asking for is to at least adjust to a percentage or whatever, and nothing's being done. I mean, would you ever believe that one of the most powerful cities in this country doesn't have enough water to drink, or a lot of people don't have any water to drink?
Some might, Jim, but you know the kind of perspective I run around with. I can I look at Detroit and I think about the residents of, say, Tikal or Copan or Chichen Itza, and I think about the magnificence of those cities and the power bases that they were. Palenque.
Oh, yeah.
And could anyone have ever imagined that entire city being engulfed again by the jungle and left to ruination?
They had to leave because they basically had destroyed all the sustenance that provided them food and stuff.
Yeah, and there's an argument to be made that the people who were supporting the super rich of those cities got tired of carrying their dead asses.
Oh yeah, there were massacres of those people. But I mean, apparently one of the things that really destroyed one of the cities was the manufacture of the white covering of limestone.
Sure, they deforested themselves to burn the wood in order to create, you know, the lime gesso with which to plaster their pyramids.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, it's just amazing how man has not been able to marshal his resources and take care of them properly. And with those Mesoamerican cultures, for example, the Aztecs, well, they certainly didn't make themselves very popular by some of their warlike tendencies and some of the stuff that they did with their captives.
Well, it wasn't so much what they did with their captives, because everybody was doing that. It was the fact that they had a tribute system, you know, similar to Rome's and arguably more advanced. That the tribute nations resented.
Well, the tribute nations allied themselves with the Spanish.
Right.
And
much to their own later chagrin.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you know, the Spanish had this craving for gold to the Indians. It was a decorative substance and things of that nature. I mean, you know, there were even situations here in America, you know, when, DeSoto was up there in the Mississippi, in which Indians would actually... when they found out what he was after, they would even go ahead and go towards another rival tribe's area and plant gold and tell the Spaniards, well, look, we found some of this, but it's over yonder. And they would do anything, you know, just to get rid of these people and sick them on their less fortunate neighbors.
To a certain extent, of course, we must remember DeSoto never saw the Mississippi.
Well, I don't know. I guess he may not have. He may not have, but I understand he was buried there, buried in it.
He.
I think.
The indigenous peoples found out pretty early on about what he was about, and they tried to wipe him out at a place in what is now Alabama called Mobile, and
right.
it almost worked. It that close, and maybe history of this continent would have been different. But of course, the real work of death and destruction was being accomplished by the filth that the white Europeans carried upon them.
DeSoto, I'm not sure what killed him. It was some type of fever or whatever.
Well, yeah, he got a little dose of something, but more indigenous peoples were killed by white European diseases than by their guns, by a long shot.
Oh, absolutely. Smallpox, you name it, they had it. And of course,
but see, I look at, you know, going back to where we were, I look at a place like Detroit, and you can make an argument that what happened in the Mesoamerican cultures, especially the Maya, we don't know what would have happened to the Mexica people and the Triple Alliance, or the cultures that opposed them or paid tribute to them, because that organic process was severely interrupted. But even with the Mayan cultures, it was a process that became unstoppable by virtue of natural forces with which they could not contend. What's happening in Detroit is not. This is entirely planned. This is what a lawyer, I guess, would call intentional conduct.
Well, it is. And it's absolutely devastating to a lot of people, and I don't know what the solution's going to be to it, if there is a solution.
Oh, I think there is a solution if we want a solution, Jim.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And the question is, who constitutes we? The rats on the Supreme Court, they don't want one. They want you know, some sort of Somalia wrapped in the American flag style strongman last man standing capitalism.
Well, the reason I called when I saw this is because I said, you know, if they can bail out Goldman Sachs and so many other big companies, then why the hell can't they bail out the Detroit water system and turn those faucets on? That's my question.
There is no will to do it. And there are legal complexities, too. Back behind all of this, you have to remember, who's the governor of Michigan? He's a vicious right-winger. And it was a couple of years ago. I remember Sandra and me talking about this, or Sandra and I. He imposed, for all intents and purposes, autocratic rule on Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
He imposed a manager, unelected, unaccountable, who came in. Again, that's what I mean. This is intentional conduct.
Was some judge involved in this too. I don't remember his name.
But the manager, and the manager was brought in. Nobody had any say in it. Nobody could countermand his orders. I mean, he really was a dictator within the classical Roman meaning of the word for Detroit. And this is not accidental. That's the point I want to drive home, Jim. This is not accidental. This isn't something that just happened because something went wrong. Just like Katrina was not an accident.
No, they wanted to eliminate the Ninth Ward.
They knew well in advance that the levees were not going to withstand a significant storm, and they let it happen. And in Detroit, they knew that the financial circumstances of Detroit's existence were tenuous at best. And when you've got the water resource, the water company of Detroit was a publicly held utility. And so the first thing you want to do when you're liquidating the commons is get rid of the liabilities and sell off only the assets. Well, in Detroit, human beings have been defined as liabilities, as they often are. I remember when a coal company just down the mountain from me went bankrupt way back, 10 years ago. Massey, the coal company, marched into bankruptcy court and said, here's our assets and here's our liabilities. Well, the liabilities that were listed were not just what they owed on machinery or what they owed in wages, but the pensions and health care plans they had to pay into. And a bankruptcy judge allowed that coal company to ditch its health care plan so that literally, a woman in the midst of breast cancer treatment was suddenly divested of her health care coverage. In the world of things like bankruptcy and liquidation, human beings become liabilities.
Oh, yeah.
They cease to be human beings.
All the pensions and stuff like this, you know?
Yeah.
And now, with this thing with Hobby Lobby, I think perhaps maybe this thing could eventually bite corporations in the ass. Because, you know, not only could the employees and people who are working for these people are affected, but also it opens the road for their shareholders too.
Oh, for piercing the corporate veil, that is an argument that's being advanced. And I understand it, but by the same token, Jim, I'm also skeptical of it, because whether or not one can pierce the corporate veil is entirely a matter for a judge to decide.
Well, we'll have to see.
And I can very easily see, or foresee, I guess, if we want to play around with that game, a situation where, remember, the court in Hobby Lobby said, oh, this is a narrow decision. Well, it's gotten real broad real fast.
Oh, yeah, 3 days.
But on the other hand, if you send that same question, well, gee, you know, the Hobby Lobby's decision says that the personal religious desires of the owners of a corporation can be imposed upon the corporation itself. Well, that destroys the veil between the ownership and the corporation, and therefore they should be the owners and directors should be directly liable. You know, this is not an honest court, Jim. I can well see that the rats would say, no, that's not what we meant. We said it was narrow, damn it.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I don't have the answer to that, but there is that possibility. I would love to see that happen. It's, you know, what's fair for the goose is fair for the gander, you know? We'll see. That's all I had to add, but anyway, so watch out for the drive-ins, and glad you enjoyed yours.
I hope we get to go back. And, you know, it sits up on a ridge, and sunset was coming on, and it was just as pretty as could be, the orange in the west, and it's a pretty part of the country, really. It's not coal country, so there's not a lot of blasted mountains there.
Well,
but I mean,
there it was
the 5th day of July, and I mean, it got cold once the sun went down.
Oh, my. Oh, one more story about the drive-in. There was some drive-in in Columbia called the Alice Drive-In. It was on the outskirts of the city. And they had shown some movie called, they were showing some movie. Hell, I was there that night. This happened. Called Carmen Baby, in which a rather provocative dance was being done on a table above a wine bottle. And some fool coming across Highway 1, apparently not paying too much attention to his driving, went straight through the fence and into all the parked cars.
Damn.
So I guess that was a real hot time at the old drive-in that night.
No doubt.
I'll let you go.
All right, Jim, you have a good evening. Good hearing from you.
Thank you, sir. You too. Bye.
Take care. Bye now. That's Jim calling from not too awfully far away here in the cradle of climate change, West Virginia. It is 24 minutes before the hour. This is rapidly turning into one of those where did the time go evenings. Thanks going out to Frank and Robert and to Jack, and again, I earlier mentioned Robert and Sal for their help in fundraising this evening. We're down to $150 to go. We've cleared up last week's backlog, and now all we've got is the evening's fundraising to go. So, 15 at 10, 10 at 15, 2 at 75, 3 at 50, 6 at 25, and all the other permutations. But the PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com. If you wish to help keep things going by participating via the traditional mail, the U.S. Postal Service, just remember, checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid because Bob Kincaid does not get the money. Boss Man Wayne handles that. And you will find the mailing address at the bottom of the contribute page over at headonradionetwork.com. You want to finish out the evening with a little bit more conversation, 304-574-8178. I have some more hands. And one from the business, namely Anthony Cumia of the Opie and Anthony show, with which I'm not terribly familiar. Apparently it was a shock jock program, whatever that means. The other night, somewhere in New York City, he decided to go on a racist Twitter rant. And it was so bad that it got him canned. Savage, violent animal. Okay, we don't have any FCC stuff here. No. Savage, violent animal, prey on white people, easy targets. This all caps, C-U-N-T, has no clue how lucky she was. She belted me 10 times. I had a gun. He claimed he was attacked in Times Square. It's really open season on white people in this day and age. No recourse. Fight back and you're a racist. The predators know this. Good luck. There's a deep-seated, S-E-E-D-E-D, there's a deep-seated problem with violence in the black community. Try to address it and you'll be exiled to Racistville, but it's real. The C-U-N-T animal kept walking into my arm I had up as a block saying, all caps, don't touch me, then would hit me. I hope a homeboy beats her to death. Great pick of the something, rag, bitch, fuck, animal, pig face, worthless, meat sack, shit pile, stink crotch, ass stain, rot bung. These are the words he's using to describe this woman that he claims beat him. And just went on and on and on. And then lo and behold, he got canned. And the Daily News is reporting he's going off the airwaves for good. Sirius XM dumped him after this Twitter puke. He is, of course, deeply, deeply offended. He's a victim, of course, naturally. He's a victim because all he was doing was telling the truth, right? And his weirdo right-wing followers are saying, we're gonna pledge to boycott your service, Sirius XM,
until you reinstate Anthony Cumia, a member of your staff should not lose their job for exercising their First Amendment right to free speech. You should be ashamed of your actions. It was in the early morning hours of Wednesday when he went off on his Twitter word vomit. And Sirius canned him. And they got a right to. And his First Amendment right to free speech is not involved in the least. Because, oddly enough, I know it may come as a surprise, corporations aren't entirely quite yet the state. Jesus, what a moron. Because, see, his weirdo right-wing followers, I'm sure, are reading that going, "Oh, he sure, that Anthony, he sure is funny." Yuck. Jeremy's with us from Vermont. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
Simon.
Cumia has always been a...
asshole?
A weird guy. Yes, an asshole. I don't know if you've ever heard any other things he's done, but...
I wouldn't know him if you played me a loop of his greatest, funniest bits.
The only thing I've ever really seen he's done that's funny is they made fun of Howard Stern at one point, not for being anything but Howard, but like the throw and the Robin type stuff. That's about the funny thing he's ever done, but he's also a self-possessed kind of a, not even kind of, he's a Nazi memorabilia collector.
Nice. Why am I not surprised at Nicholsworth?
Because he says that he's a collector because they're snazzy dressers, so he appreciates their uniforms. I mean, not too long ago, back in my FedEx days, I had Sirius, and I listened to the guys after them, who were named Ron and Fez, so again, another kind of circumstance, I would trail in to the next show by hearing the end of that, and they used to do a walkover, him and his partner, from one radio station to... I think they walked over from KFAN to Sirius or XM at the time. And in one of those walks, he wore a Nazi combat helmet on the streets of New York to see what people would say. And there was a famous comic at the time. He's died recently. His name was Patrice O'Neill. He was an African-American man. And he put that helmet on to see who would literally get picked up first. They got the Nazi helmet or African-American. Guess who got picked up first most of the time?
What?
The Nazi helmet.
Oh, God.
He's had it coming for a long time. I mean, he's always gone on rant, and he's said things on airs that are always edgy. I mean, he bashes on immigrants all the time, how they're bad. His partner,
yeah,
I'd say, is more middle of the...
Yeah, but how is it, Jeremy, and I'm not taking issue with you, but how is it that we define immigrant bashing as being edgy? What's edgy about that? It sounds to me it's just mean and shitty.
It is mean and shitty, but when I say edgy, he would use he would roll jokes into it, like during mid-2000s, there was a sort of a million person march in New York, which was immigrant. And, like, he would just say horrible things like, traffic is backed up because of you and 1,000 of your terror-spawning kids are here. Things like that. Nothing.
Well, and of course.
Nothing that could fire
him for. And, of course, the guy had, you don't just walk in the front door at SiriusXM and say, "Hey, could I have a job? I'm a real good disc jockey." This is playing in a pretty rarefied atmosphere. So there are things involved called
contracts, written contracts that have been gone over by lawyers and agents for both sides, and everybody's come to an agreement as to what will be within the four corners of the contract, and everybody knows what's in the four corners of the contract. He knows what he knows what he can be fired for, and they know what they can't fire him for. And so, lo and behold, he gets canned within the terms of his contract and immediately runs out to be a victim. He tweeted, "Sirius decided to cave and fire me. Welcome to Bizarro World. Fired for shit that wasn't even on the air and wasn't illegal. So who's next?"
We can only hope a couple of the people get fired, but it'll never happen because they're so fat and glorious sitting in their chairs, it'll never happen. But no, he's not a victim. Like I said, I've listened to him before, and occasionally when I can't think of his name right now, Opie is his partner.
Yeah.
He's kind of funny. He's more, I'd say, more liberal than that. Anthony's definitely a neocon libertarian. I mean, like, he's anti-everything, like government, gun control. He was one of the biggest complainers that he couldn't have, like, a...
As a millionaire, I'm sure he's opposed to taxation.
Yeah, and he saw himself as a big target, so he felt he had to carry a Glock around New York City because he was the target because he was famous. I mean, real big ego. I can guarantee you, though, even though he's been fired, they're paying out his contract. So he's still going to sit at home and collect his million-plus salary for however many more years was on the contract. He didn't lose out on that. He just walked out on his job.
Well, that's a brief...
Because they're also probably throwing in basically no talk in any other part of it, too, for a couple of years, and he does go somewhere else. If he will, I don't know. This is kind of like the last stop for these two. They've been known for doing pretty horrendous things in the past and being fired several times for it. Like, mid-2000s, they did Sex for Sam, which is where they took a homeless guy and got the church on in Boston when they were in Boston. I think they got fired for Sex for Sam in New York City. They took a guy into a Catholic church. In Boston, they called up the mayor on his direct line in his office and convinced him his family had just died in a car accident. They got fired for that. A couple different things, too. So these guys are shock jocks at the worst. And this is why Sirius and XM took them on, because somehow people got a kick out of it and thought it was funny. I never saw any entertainment. I thought it was quite shocking, and that's just what they served a purpose for.
Yeah.
And they also, a couple years ago, did something called the Homeless Shopping Spree, which is where they basically gave homeless people $1,000 each and set them loose on the public as, like, a horrible thing, like stinky guys shopping in a normal store like other people would.
Yeah.
So this may have completely stopped their show. So if he's one half of that, I can't see the other guy carrying on by himself. I just can't see it happening.
Somebody in the chat room suggested Opie and the Love Sponge.
Yeah, Love Sponge is just creepy. That's
he's another creeper. I mean, I can listen to, you know, I can listen to a little bit of Stern from time to time. Just because I don't find him somehow as disgusting as most of the right wingers. He's not right wing all the time. But
Stern is more of a sexual nature in his comedy, whereas Opie and Anthony, especially Anthony, was more of a racial joker. And I mean, he would, I do remember him saying that special N-word on the air quite a few times because he knew he could and he wouldn't get fired for it because there was free speech and it was a pay service. But once he left that environment and bashes people openly on the street, he calls them savages. And this isn't the first time he's called the African-American community savages. He said that about Detroit for years now, that they're all savages, and that we basically just let them kill each other. And I mean, just pretty despicable stuff.
Yeah, and it's all privilege language too, and it's coded, and it's there for.
Yeah, no, there's nothing to dog whistles here. Like he said that one basically, you know, the Obama this, Obama that, Obama's horrible, and of course so was what's his name?
And you know what? You don't get canned when you've got a contract job with Sirius for that. You get canned for violating certain minimum standards that the corporation sets for themselves, not for the listeners, and not, since it's satellite, with deference to the FCC. See, understand, Anthony Cumia had no free speech rights. None. The only free speech rights he had were those free speech rights that attach to all of us, and that is not to have our speech censored by the government. Sirius is not the government, okay? His speech rights were defined within the terms of his contract.
Right. I mean, the government didn't say he couldn't say it. Basically, Sirius had said, if you want, you're gone. That's all they said to him. And, of course, like you said, yes, all his creepy followers who like to watch him blow shit up with his sniper rifle and stuff.
Yes, see, Horst in the chat room just pointed something out, and it was the same thing I was thinking when I said that I can tolerate Stern. He does a good interview once in a while.
Yeah, he does.
For some reason or another, I wound up catching an interview that he did with Bill Hicks after Bill Hicks was banned from doing, it was his last ever appearance, it turned out to be, on Letterman's program, about which Letterman felt horrible. And the stuff that Hicks was going to do is tame now by comparison. But that was, you know, that was what he was talking about. I must admit, I have a guilty pleasure of listening to Stern, the goon on Jay Leno. Because apparently nobody in the comedy business likes Jay Leno anymore.
They don't like him because he can't just go away. He's always in the limelight somehow.
Right.
And he did Conan pretty dirty too by giving him a show and taking it back because
right.
NBC kind of said, hey, he's not doing as well as you were for 25 years. Oh, well, I just want to comment on Cumia. Like I said, he's had this coming for a long time, and maybe this will be a wake-up call. Maybe not, but maybe it'll be a wake-up call to some of these goons out there that think they can get away with anything. And it's kind of guys
that
it's free speech.
Well, but by the same token, let's be clear about something, Jeremy. About one thing, Jeremy, and that is, I'm not sitting here being an advocate for Sirius because this is a huge corporation. Granted, they're struggling financially, and that's a hell of their own making. But I'm not necessarily on their side. They made a calculated decision. They got a lot of listener backlash off of it. And at the end of the day, if somebody is your boss and you're not writing your own check, then you're subject to that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it applies whether you're in the smallest radio market in America, the fifth smallest, or if you're on Sirius XM. And see, they loved Opie and Anthony as long as Opie and Anthony were working territory that wasn't, you know, so bad as to get people to step away or more importantly, make advertisers go, nope, sorry, we're done with this guy. But the minute you cross that line, yeah, boom, it's done.
I'm pretty sure that's probably crossing the line if people look at the context of it. I mean, in the end, money talks, bullshit walks, and basically they let him walk. Hopefully they stick with it. Like I said, he does some pretty despicable things, especially admitting that he's a Nazi memorabilia collector. When I heard that, I lost, like, any kind of interest in him that I ever had, just because I heard that, and I mean, we used to joke about how someday his girlfriend would walk out and see him standing in front of a mirror dressed in full Nazi regalia saying, help me. Because, I mean, this is just whatever.
Yeah, I don't care who you are. That's funny. Yeah, no. No, not at all.
Not too much.
Hey, wow, it's time to get out of here, Jeremy. Yeah. Good talking to you.
You too. Thanks, Mom.
Bye now. I got a couple of leftovers for tomorrow's Titanic Tuesday. I'm sure the Titanic intellects will be hard and heavy and hot at it between now and then. That's okay. We'll have time for more. A reminder, Dr. Bill begins tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. On Tuesdays, he has to get started a half an hour late because of his own obligations. So we'll get started at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That is 10:30 Pacific Time. I'm not kidding. Dr. Bill is doing American history like you've never heard it done before. And the neat thing is, it's not dry, it's not dull, and it is eminently applicable to our life as it presently is. The past informs the present, and the present creates the future. So check out Dr. Bill, either live at 1:30 tomorrow, Mondays and Wednesdays is at 1 p.m., or check out the podcast. By the way, the podcast may be a little bit slow getting up this evening, because Ben's had some computer issues. Anyway, thanks everybody for all you do to keep all of this going. I am happy to announce that we got past the last of our last week's fundraising goal. We will begin tomorrow with $300 to raise on Titanic Tuesday. Hopefully that will lower somewhat in the interim. Thanks to everybody, all of you, however you participate in this program, whether you call, whether you write, tweet, Facebook, email, chat room, or just sit and enjoy the conversation. It all goes into the creation of this tremendous little community that we have put together over the span of 10 years. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you very much to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Since 2002, 12 years now, Ben Birch has been busy doing everything in his power to try to save the idea of progressive radio, and doing so at WhiteRoseSociety.org, and he has never once sent a bill. That is Ben Birch. And thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org. If you want to end mountaintop removal, there's one way to do it. Get behind the ACAC. And your letters and your emails and your calls to your member of Congress and your members of the Senate are what will, in fact, get the job done. ACHEACT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .O-R-G. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.